Hello, and welcome back to the Truly Horrible NBA Podcast. I'm your host, Connor Allen, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Daniel Porter.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for being back again, listening to this horrible podcast. We're really happy to be here.
So we need to start off. We made a big mistake last time. We feel really bad about
another
it.
Another big mistake?
This one was really bad, actually. This is probably the worst one we've made.
When is this podcast going to become legitimate?
Never, I think. I think mistakes are always going to happen because we're human, and mistakes happen until, you know...
Yeah, that is a good point. We are definitely human.
So, last podcast...
No robots here.
Yeah, when discussing the Nets draft, we talked about them picking Diallo with the 45th pick. Unfortunately, that pick was traded to the Hornets in the Dwight Howard-Timothy Mozgov trade. So, he actually now currently plays for the Oklahoma City Thunder through another transaction.
Yeah.
So,
did we really say he was going to be on the Nets?
Yeah, we really dropped the ball on that one.
That's
terrible. Because the problem is what happened is we were looking at a draft recap, and because that Dwight Howard trade can't go through till the new league year,
It still had him on the Nets,
and that's just how we messed it up. And
yeah. He makes sense as a fit. He also is, like, similar to a lot of the things that
it seemed
Oklahoma
like it could have been the Nets.
Do. I mean, but, it makes sense to either team. There it is. Happened fast this episode. Wow, we really are just... It's like clockwork over here.
Yeah, I mean, it's really like... The Truly Horrible NBA Podcast bingo sheet is filling up quickly.
Right. Brought to you by iMessage.
Yep. So, we're really sorry about the mistake, you know, but we'll promise to do better moving forward.
But we also are going to keep making mistakes.
Because everyone does. So, moving forward to our, you know, iTunes 5-star review of the week. This one is titled Pretty Solid by... Future guest, hopefully.
That's an interesting username.
Yeah, I know, right? We haven't had any guests, really. All around good podcast for those yearning for insight into the less competitive / covered teams in the NBA. That said, I think this podcast has, in all caps, lots of room for growth. We're talking about a low five here, almost as if it's a forced five right now, but there's high five-star potential for this podcast. One might suggest bringing guests onto the pod for starters, just to mix things up. I would, in all caps, love to be one of those guests if ever given the opportunity. Well,
roll my eyes. Can we talk about that review a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely.
Gonna act, you know, how are you gonna act and imply like this might not be a 5-star podcast while also shamelessly trying to come on the podcast? What is that?
Clearly disingenuous review. Clearly thinks it's a solid 5 stars and just wants to get out of the action.
Right. I mean, of course there's room for growth. You know, I see our podcast as...
6 stars someday.
Potentially, you know. Maybe 10 stars if iTunes changes the system. I've been like, you know, DJ Khaled. I've been calling them suffering from success.
But yeah, you know, maybe we'll bring on a guest. But, you know.
It's not out of the question, but I feel like we would need, you know, some real demonstrable evidence of like what they could bring to the table.
Yeah, pitch us a segment and we'll happily have you on. Potential future guest, whatever. Hopeful. Moving on, so I think we've had kind of a couple days of free agency to talk about. There's been a couple summer league games. So,
the unfortunate reality of free agency is that as soon as we post this pod, it'll probably be obsolete. Something will happen.
Yeah.
You know, these deals are just breaking all the time. But that's really fun. And it's not like we were just going to wait to analyze. Like, we were excited to jump in. If something does happen, so be it. But there's already been a lot of stuff to discuss with all our teams.
Yep. So starting off, we're just going to start with the Suns. Because they've had a sort of busy start to the free agency. Also, interesting enough, because we are looking at the worst teams, actually their free agency is much quieter than most teams. But so with the Suns, kind of their first big deal is that they signed Trevor Ariza to a 1-year, $15 million contract. What are your thoughts on this signing?
Well, I really like Trevor Ariza. I think this is a big deal because it shifts the power of balance among the best teams in the West, at least.
Yeah, I'd really care about this signing if I watched the playoffs, which unfortunately, you know, I abstained from.
Yeah, sorry to bring up the playoffs and all. I mean, I heard Nate Duncan say, I think he kind of nailed it when he said that this would be a good signing for any team other than the Suns. But I am interested as a Suns homer in trying to make the pitch, which is that you can never have too many wings in the NBA. That's what people say. If you look at Boston, how successful they were just plugging in wings this year. And I mean, if you have guys who can switch, playing as many guys who can switch on the floor as possible, it's great. They're probably going to be playing Ayton at the 5 heavy minutes, I would expect. I don't really know what the plan is with Tyson Chandler. But I'm hoping that the reason why they have all these wings is because they're going to be playing mostly non-traditional fours. So if you see a good amount of Ariza at the 4, I expect Mikal Bridges will probably be playing some 4.
But they still have Bender and Chris. Like, what happens to those guys?
I know. Well, I think that Bender and Chris, I mean, I see them in two different categories. But if the Suns want to be good this year, which it seems like they do, neither of those guys should be playing very much. But Bender I really like just because I really like the idea of what I think he could be. Right. He moves really well for how big he is. He sees the floor and makes good extra passes. And he can, I mean, if he can at least shoot 35%, 36% from three and keep people honest out there, I see a path for Bender to being like a low usage productive player. And those guys are important, especially if you have a Devin Booker on your team. You need some guys who are good, low usage players.
Yeah.
But so that's why I could see Bender being like playing a lot of minutes, maybe even starting or being the backup. They got probably just got to start Ayton from day one, but yes. I don't think he's going to be very good right away. But maybe I'm wrong.
I think he'll be good on offense and struggle on defense to start, like the first scouting report on him was.
Like you see from a lot of young guys.
Yeah.
But anyway, I hope the plan is not to just play all these centers together. You know, I hate the idea of like Chris and Ayton sharing the court. That would be a disaster.
It's definitely going to happen some, though. I mean, there's another always, like, they have to play Chris and Bender some. These guys have to get at least 10 to 15 minutes a night, which means they have to play some four.
Yeah, we'll see. But I'm hoping that the point of signing Ariza, because they now have TJ Warren, Josh Jackson, Mikal Bridges, and Trevor Ariza. Hoping the idea is to play lots of like versatile lineups that are non-traditional with wings at the four.
Yeah, that's got to be the goal. My concern with the Ariza signing, I think the opportunity cost is pretty big. So, for instance, I think there's zero chance the Suns make the playoffs next year. If you look at the West, there's like 10 teams that are better than the Suns still, even with these additions.
Yep.
And
you would need to see some injuries. I mean, yeah, and you would need to see the Suns play way over their head. This season, so I think we both think that it's kind of looking like Devin Booker is going to be playing point guard.
Yeah, which I love. Right?
There's nobody available at point guard who would be one of the Suns' best five players. So unless they want to have someone out there as like a Keith Bogan status, you know? I mean, like Elfrid Payton was actually better than the kind of guys that they're going to be choosing between now, right?
We'll get to the Payton stuff. We'll dive into that. Okay. That's frustrating. Talk about Payton, too. Yeah, but Booker at the one I really like because he just, you want him, he's a good playmaker. He's actually like underrated with the ball in his hands and always has been throughout his career because he's like, his archetype was a shooter, but he actually was, to start his career, not that efficient from the three-point line. Now he, of course, has gotten to that point where he's really efficient, but he's really good with the ball in his hands, really good running a pick and roll and everything. That's what you want him to do. I mean, the hope is that he makes the transition. I heard someone say, like, he's going from being CJ McCollum to being James Harden, and hopefully he, like, makes that type of leap and really can become a creator because that's how this team reaches its ceiling.
Yeah. See, I, generally speaking, don't lend a lot of credence to the idea of, like, a good stats, bad team guy.
If you're efficient that's a little bit on a bad team,
especially if you look at a guy like Devin Booker, who, I mean, sure, he gets, like, his volume numbers benefit from the fact that he's on a bad team, but there's no question if he were surrounded by better players, he'd be shooting better percentages, getting more open looks. And so hopefully these are steps towards that. But it is also, it's going to be a big test ultimately. Like, where we're at with Devin Booker, I think, is we're trying to figure out, is he going to be a top 10 player in the league or a top 30 player in the league?
Right.
And if he's a top 10 player in the league, at some point he needs to start being able to at least drag a team to the playoffs or close to playoff contention.
Yep.
And I'm hoping that we see that from him this year. I think they have good role players around him. The defense, obviously, is going to be a problem, but this team projects to score a ton of points. They have one of my favorite rookies in Bridges. So I am excited to watch them.
I would have just rather, with the $15 million with Trevor Ariza, they either targeted a young guy. Ariza's 33. He's not going to be on the next great Suns team. Or they had used it just to take back a bad expiring contract. And
so who, I mean, let's talk about who might have been a good fit for them. Unfortunately, like, their biggest hole, point guard, it's not like there's a really good restricted free agent point guard.
What if they'd made an offer to Exum? Exum got 3 years, 33 from the Jazz. What if they'd given him 3 for 40 or whatever and just made the Jazz lease?
See, I mean, that would have been fun. That's a really fun outline of a team. And, you know, I think that Exum projects as potentially one of those good low usage players. He can guard the other team's best perimeter scorer and take that heat off of Booker. It's interesting. Yeah, see, I guess the silver lining with this Ariza move, because he is too old, he doesn't fit the timeline of their core, and they're not going to be good enough this year. I mean, they might, their best case scenario this year is they're like a pleasant surprise. Maybe they win 40 games. But at least, so Ariza's clearly a move by McDonough, and all these kind of like win now moves are examples of him trying to save his job, which that's what it seems like.
Always bad.
And it's never a good situation. Like, if you're an NBA owner and you're thinking about firing your GM, you should just do it.
Yeah.
Because if they have to save their job, they're going to make dumb win now moves. We've seen it over and over again. But at least he's not tying them up or like really messing with their future. They're just rolling over the cap space, and there might be somebody who's a better fit for their team next year, and they'll have a better idea of what they have.
This Ariza contract could have been like 3 years, $36 million, and that's like the disaster. Right.
That would have been really bad for the Suns. And again, it's not because we don't like Trevor Ariza. Trevor Ariza would benefit any team. I think there's a pretty good chance that how this ends is that Trevor Ariza gets bought out and is still on a different playoff team next year if the Suns are really bad.
So then we want to touch on quickly, we touched on a little earlier, the Elfrid Payton. So Elfrid Payton signed with the Pelicans, seemingly for the minimum.
I think it's a tad bit over the minimum. It's just like a few hundred K over the minimum.
This is frustrating because they gave up the 41st pick, and as we've said multiple times, like the 41st pick in the second round is like a real pick. You know,
it's a good pick. And we went through the whole second round of this draft and just talked about how many good guys were available. They definitely could have had somebody like a long-term piece, would have been team-controlled.
But I don't hate taking a chance on a guy who's a top 10 pick, trying to see what you like.
How much of a chance did they really take on him? You know, how good would Payton have to been? Because he was playing in like a pretty unfavorable situation on a bad team that wasn't trying to win, and he wasn't even with them for that long.
Well, they had him in practice for 3 months, you know, and they clearly didn't like enough of what they saw in practice.
If they wouldn't even pay him like $2 million or $2.5 million, exactly. I think the minimum is like $2 million now, but $2.5 or $3 million or whatever.
Exactly. So that's a bummer just because of the opportunity cost of that second round pick and everything. But this is not the type of move that kills you, and it's not a terrible gamble to take. And then the final thing we want to touch on with the Suns is that there's been a lot of reports in the past day that Devin Booker is in line to sign a max contract expansion.
It's been announced that he's going to sign
it. Okay. That's disappointing to me because the opportunity cost of leveraging his incredibly low cap hold next summer and then giving him that max offer sheet is tough. And I get they want to like maintain the relationship with the player.
Right, it's a relationship thing. They just cut his best friend on the team, Tyler Ulis, which, I mean, you know, Tyler Ulis was pretty bad. I like him, but he was pretty bad. It's one of the worst rotation guys in the league last year.
Really inefficient from the field, and he was really small, so his defense hurts. Small. We have a friend who's really, like, thinks he's undervalued, and I agree that he maybe deserves, like, a chance on an NBA roster, and maybe the Suns should have kept him just, like, relationship with Devin Booker, and they need point guards anyways, but this is not a move that you kill them for. He was bad. Like, he was a bad player.
I wanted to like Ulis. I loved him in college. Hasn't been very good in the NBA so far. But anyway, I mean, the relationship thing is just too important. Basically, how I would think of it is if Devin Booker isn't a max-level player, the Suns are screwed anyways.
Right.
And we don't practice screwed.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It's like the Colts back in the Peyton Manning days. So I think that's what we have for the Suns. So I think I want to move on to the Magic now. So the big move with the Magic is that they re-signed Aaron Gordon to a 4-year, $84 million deal. Heartbreaking.
We love it. We love it. We love
it.
It
was really smart.
We were so scared that the Magic were just going to lose Aaron Gordon after spending a high pick and investing in him. And he's really like the only thing they have to show for 6 years of rebuilding other than, you know, they have more young guys now or just drafted. But Gordon's the only guy who they've drafted and developed who's actually been good for their team.
And as we said, like, look, this contract makes it so they almost have no cap flexibility at all for, like, years to come. But that's because of other mistakes they made. You don't compound the mistake of clogging up your cap book by then not re-signing Aaron Gordon. So it's
it's pretty sad. We were talking earlier, before we started the pod, it's like 38.5% of their cap this upcoming year is taken up by DJ Augustine, Bismack Biyombo, and Nikola Vucevic.
Which, like,
you just can't win.
Those guys don't play on a, like, not one of those guys.
Vucevic is maybe a rotation player. Augustine and Biyombo are, like, replacement-level players, and they're giving a quarter of the cap just to those two.
It's
like,
so
you can't
bad.
Win with that. But it doesn't mean, you know, in 2 years, when those contracts start to come up, then the Magic hopefully will be more frugal, or at least, like, prudent with how they spend their money.
They probably have one summer to dive in. If you look at their cap sheet in 2 years, they should have some money to spend, which is a good summer to have money to spend because
there will be a lot of guys. There's also going to be a lot of money in the league. But hopefully by then,
and
the unfortunate reality is, like, as fun as the idea is, and we just want to dream and fantasize about Gordon, Isaac, and Bamba.
Bamba, I mean.
Not Biyombo.
Yeah, not Biyombo. Yeah, Bamba.
Gordon, Isaac, and Bamba. Statistically, one of either Isaac or Bamba is probably not going to make it.
Right.
Like, guys at the top of the draft don't hit every time. Mm-hmm. And especially if you look at the Magic draft record, it's like one out of every two of their guys actually hits.
And
less than one, I mean.
Another point, just diving back to the 2020 offseason for a second, the NBA released their salary cap projections for that, and it's actually $116 million, which is a lot higher than, like, speculation had been it was going to be, which means that there's going to be even more space. And I really hope the Magic find a way to give Aaron Gordon's contract front-loaded, which will mean that his salary will be descending each year, so that by that 2020 offseason, he'll only be making about $20 million on that, and then he'll make $19 million
yeah, the year after. Yeah, I kind of doubt that's how it is, because he was restricted. Well, it's just like, I mean, it makes sense. The players, in this situation, the player had a lot of leverage, and the players don't want to agree to a contract like that because it affects their next contract, which is a product. You know, you can make up to 125% or whatever of what you were making that previous season. But you do get the money earlier. You get the money earlier, but in the 10-year span that NBA players should be thinking about their money, and it costs you money.
Right. And then, so yeah, look, we're happy with the Aaron Gordon signing. That was really,
really happy he's going to be back, because, but on the other hand, the Magic are years away. Like, years, we really don't away. Know
they should try what to be really, right really bad this year. Like,
they, I mean, I don't know if they have to try.
Yeah, they're just going to be
so
really
that's
bad.
The issue with Gordon, too, is, like, is he going to fit the timeline of whoever the next great Magic team is? But at least this way, they're not losing him for nothing.
He's only
22. Sure, he's only 22. He seems like a guy who probably isn't going to peak until he's, like, 25, 26, just because, like, it's a lot of skills that he still needs to develop, but his physical profile is undeniable.
And $20 million a year for a guy like that is a good contract.
It's worth it. It passes the Nene test, as we say, yep. Which means that it would be tradable. Another team would trade for it, so it's not really a bad contract.
Other Magic news. So Mario Hezonja, the fifth pick in the 2015 NBA draft by our Orlando Magic, signed with the New York Knicks for 1 year.
Right. I mean, this just seems
million.
Like it's bad for everyone. It's bad for the Magic. It's bad for the Knicks. It's bad for Hezonja. Because it's bad for the Magic, because they clearly should have picked up the team option.
Oh my
right?
God.
They had another year. He's finally started to show some flashes this year. It's still, like, to bail on someone who was drafted that high, that quickly, is
unless
terrible.
They're Jahlil Okafor or, like, Anthony Bennett, you just don't do it. Like, guys who are just, like,
right? And
not
the
in
thing
shape.
About Hezonja is he hadn't even really played. It's one thing if they've, exactly, like, Okafor and Bennett were given tons of chances, and they played and were horrible.
Right.
And versus Hezonja, when he played this year, was, like, kind of okay, and I know they declined the team option before this year. But I guess Vogel must have just really hated him.
Yeah.
But that's a veteran coach who's used to coaching a playoff team, like, I don't know. I do still kind of think Hezonja is going to be good, at least okay.
A role
not
player.
Like good.
Do
yeah,
you know who I think
he would
end up having a career a lot like? I think he could have a career a lot like Trevor Ariza, a guy who we just talked about as being like a really good
and a late
piece.
Bloomer.
Yeah,
yeah
late
Ariza.
Bloomer.
And the weird thing about Ariza is he was good and then bad and then good again.
Yeah.
But
shock me if Hezonja follows.
Hezonja could have a weird journeyman career, but just be an interesting guy. It just doesn't. This deal doesn't really make sense to me for the Knicks. Because it's only 1 year.
Exactly.
What are you going to get from him this year? And then, like, if he's good, then he'll leave again. And if he's bad, then...
I mean, if he's good, then you have to sign him with salary cap space. You know, you don't actually get his bird rights
right.
and everything.
It's too bad.
And then the final thing with the Magic is that they're in talks with Isaiah Thomas. I think we have slightly conflicting opinions on this. I'm in favor of this move because... I think with Bamba, you desperately need a point guard who's good to run the team and like create opportunities and everything. And that's the way that you can develop a guy like Bamba and Isaac and Gordon. They
right.
just need a guy
I mean,
who can
I,
play.
You know, I don't want the starter to be DJ Augustine. I'm not particularly impressed or hopeful about Thomas's future, though. And so I guess what the disagreement comes down to ultimately is the likelihood of him being good this
right.
year. Obviously, if he's good, like they need point guards.
I don't
they
think
just
he's
need
be good.
Bodies.
I think he's
going
to be like.
But you think
fine.
He'll be okay?
Okay. As long
maybe
as
like back to. I mean, here's the thing. You can't even project him to be back to pre Boston level production or something because he is going to have to reinvent himself as a player.
Yes.
And
absolutely.
He's less athletic than ever. And also. Like, before Boston even, he was playing mostly on bench units where his responsibility was to just get buckets. And if he does come into an Orlando situation, yeah, it's going to be as a facilitator. They need somebody who's going to be able to do a good job at the pick and roll, who's going to be able to make sure these guys get looks in spots where they're actually comfortable, right?
Yep,
he's going to need to know his personnel really well.
And so hopefully, I mean, look, maybe that's asking a lot of a guy to, like, you know, when he's in his late 20s to change his game somewhat like that, but... I just feel better about walking into the season with Isaiah Thomas starting at point guard than DJ Augustine. And I want to make the caveat. If this contract is more than a one-year contract, it's an absolute
it's
disaster.
It's not
going to
be more than
but
a one-year contract.
One-year contract for like
even the Magic
minimum,
wouldn't do that.
It's totally fine, and I'm in favor of
it's,
that.
But it might be 1 year, like $5 million,
which is,
would be a little tough.
Little
that's
tough,
too much money.
Too much
but
money, but
it's still 1 year, so it's not that big a deal.
So yeah, that's the Magic. Look, overall, though, look, they got the big important thing for this summer, right? They re-signed Aaron Gordon, and we like their draft picks. So ultimately, like, the Magic, the new regime, seems to be doing a good job so far. It's hard to criticize. So I think as Magic fans, you have to feel better about things moving forward than you have in a long time. So moving on to the Nets. The Nets had a couple free agency signings. So the first big one is that they re-signed Joe Harris to a two-year, $16 million contract. How do you feel about this contract?
I'm a big Joe Harris fan, man. It is a little unfortunate. I wish they could have gotten at least one more year, because these aren't going to be good teams still.
Right.
There's no way the Nets are good. And so, you know, like, part of the appeal to having a Joe Harris is he's a guy who you can just put in the corner, and if you have really good creation, then he stretches the floor, creates more open space for your other guards. I'm just not really sure that's going to matter for this team. And this past year, like, I think he probably ends up getting traded, because he makes sense.
Well, I hope that's... I was about to say, I hope the plan is that they're going to trade him on this contract, because it's a very tradable contract. But they... And my issue with their next sign, when they signed Ed Davis for 1 year, $4 million, is that the Nets, as we've continually said, need to try to be as bad as possible next season, because they just need an influx of a top five talent on this roster. They have some talented guys. They've done a really good job picking in the 20s, but you just can't build a championship core with guys picked in the 20s. You know, you need some top 10 picks. And so they need to be bad this year, as bad as possible. And signing guys like Ed Davis just helps you win more. And Joe Harris helps you win more.
Yeah, I mean, they're a lot more than Ed Davis and Joe Harris away from winning games, I think.
But,
even last year, though, the Nets were like more competitive and respectable than we thought. And last year, that was in their best interest, because they didn't have their pick. It's great that that was the eighth pick and not the second pick.
Yep.
We'll see what happens this year. I trust Sean Marks at the end of the day. I think if they're good, he'll make moves. Ed Davis could be a buyout candidate. He could be somebody who gets flipped at the deadline.
Look, ideally they do what they did with Tyler Zeller last year, and they turn Ed Davis into a couple second-round picks, and they turn Joe Harris. Maybe like they take back a bad contract, and they get a first out of Joe Harris. You're like, that's what I hope they do.
There's so many teams that could benefit from having a guy like Joe Harris.
Right. He's a really
Imagine
good
player. Imagine Joe Harris on the Pelicans. The Pelicans such a need a guy like Joe Harris. Yeah. There's just never enough shooting in the league.
Do you know another team that could really use some shooting?
Timberwolves?
I was going to say the Lakers.
The Lakers, right? Oh, my God. Yeah, so, I mean, I think that probably gets dealt, but it was a good job by the Nets to find a guy who anybody in the league could have had,
yeah,
who's now making $8 million a year, and hopefully they're able to flip him and use that sort of equity to try to find the next Joe Harris.
Yep, and then the Nets could have some more cap space depending on what happens with Dwight Howard's buyout. We haven't got the details on that yet. We don't know how much they're going to have, but it seems like they could have anywhere between like $8 to $12 million depending on how much he gave up, and that's still very unclear. I'd like to see them use that to absorb some bad contracts. Maybe they absorb Darrell Arthur from the Nuggets for a couple seconds or something like that, you know, something along those lines, maybe something else. But
if it's up to the like 10 to 12 range, that starts to become interesting. If they really have that much cap space, maybe throw it at a restricted free agent.
Jabari Parker
is really interesting, especially a team with the Nets that has time, that needs stars and can take that high upside chance. I mean, that probably gets matched.
Yeah.
3 years, $30 million to Jabari or something, but it's at least interesting. There's more good restricted free agents too. I guess a lot of them people are just assuming get matched.
Is Zach LaVine's probably gonna
Zach
get matched.
Zach LaVine is interesting. That one is really a standoff though.
Yeah, I mean, could you see him, just a quick tangent, could you see Zach LaVine taking the qualifying offer?
Definitely. Because it seems like it's starting to get kind of like bitter over there. The Bulls media goes after their own players for sure. And Zach has kind of been like playing back too. I saw him tweet like LMAO back at somebody who was implying that like $15 million would be a huge overpay for LaVine.
Wow. Yeah.
Which really, like, as Zach, you just can't engage. Like, come on, dude. But yeah, it's not out of the question that he could end up taking the qualifying offer. He doesn't really seem to fit that well with what the Nets already have, but he's an example of a guy, if you can get him for $10 million, then
probably can't get him for $10 million though, if he's tweeting
laughing
out
stuff. $15 million. Yeah, well, we don't know what's going on behind the scenes.
Yeah, I just, like, for me with the Nets, look, I do trust Sean Marks, you know, though I didn't love the two signings. I mean, I really was frustrated with the Ed Davis signing, because just don't think you want to bring in guys who help you win this year. I would rather, like, and he's going to take away, you know, minutes from young guys possibly, and that's concerning too. And very bizarre for the Trailblazers to let him walk. That was really strange. But yeah, so I think moving on to the Kings. The big news for the Kings, first of all, just want to start. I love that the Kings haven't signed anyone in free agency.
Here's the thing, Connor. not to burst your bubble, but have the Kings not signed anyone in free agency because they're, like, being smart and patient? Or if the Kings not signed anyone in free agency because nobody wants to play there?
Hey, you know what? It's about the results, not the process.
Oh, yeah. That's what this podcast is all about, right? Results.
Right. Results, not process. No, but look, maybe that's why. But
trust the results.
Trust the results. look, if that's the case, then... Man, the Kings have been so bad for so long that it's finally working out for them because they're like hoarding that cap space. They have $17 million. Talk about a team that can make a run at like a Zach LaVine or something like that.
Right. I mean, the Kings, they just have no wings.
Justin Jackson. I mean, they have some young
Justin
wings.
Justin Jackson could be okay. I think he could be like an eighth or ninth man who's going to be forced to start.
I could see him maybe like a sixth or seventh. I mean, not like this season, he would be like barely playing for a contender. But I think as his like peak for his career, he could be like the first wing off the bench, which is a valuable piece.
Something. Other than that, I mean, the Sacramento Summer League has been really fun. It's cool that they've been able to pack the arena there and have really good crowds. Like, those early 2000s Kings teams had the best crowd in the NBA. They just haven't been good for so long, but they really deserve something to feel good about. So that's nice. Unfortunately, you know, their roster is what it is.
Yeah, so want to talk a little about their Summer League performance, their guys who played?
Yeah. So Marvin Bagley, I mean, he's at least been pretty bouncy, which is encouraging. He had that really one nice, really nice dunk, which was like, I didn't know he had that in him. Yep. He's one of those guys who doesn't always play with all of his athleticism, you know? Like, he can do it, but that doesn't mean he actually does. But that was cool. His second game, I mean, they just got destroyed by the Warriors last night. Jordan Bell took his lunch money. And Bagley's issue, we're going to see it all year, he's going to have some really ugly performances because he's just all left-hand. Guys in the NBA, I mean, they know, like, they get scouting reports. Most of them read them.
J.R. Smith.
And that's, like, an obvious thing, you know?
Yeah.
Like, there's some stuff that is probably, like, a little denser in an NBA scouting report, but if a guy is a rookie, too, I do think there's some element of, like, trying to take advantage of rookies. And if he's a rookie, second overall pick, really high profile, and he's all left-hand, I think Bagley's going to struggle this year. But my Bagley sentiments have been pretty well documented on this podcast.
Yeah, pretty negative.
Sure, no one's surprised by that.
Yeah. This was really discouraging to see Bagley struggle this much in a summer league game. This is the type of setting you would think he would really thrive in, you know, around lesser talents and everything. So this has been definitely discouraging for me. But look, it's just one game. I mean, look, he did go 3 for 16, which is bad. His first game was fine, 6 for 11. He looked fine in that game. But the second game was really tough. Not ready to freak out about it, you know, where you can't freak out about a single game. But it is discouraging to see the second pick in the draft struggle this much in a summer league game.
Yeah, and we'll see how the rest of the rookies look, too. I mean, you know, I'm really curious to see how Ayton plays in the summer league, but I think he's going to be a little bit of a bull in the china shop. You know, we've seen Trae Young struggle for whatever it's worth. I think it's important just in general that we as fans don't read too much into the Summer League.
Yes.
But Summer League is kind of one of those things where if a guy struggles, it's not the end of the world. Plenty of people have struggled and become good. But if a guy's really good right away in Summer League and just jumps off the screen, it's a good sign. Yep. I mean, I remember like Damian Lillard from day one. You could just tell he was just better than his competition. And we never really thought Bagley was going to be that, but let's not like freak out. It's not the end of the world. They drafted him for what they think he's going to be in 3 or 4 years.
Not
anyway.
What he is now. Yeah. Encouraging summer league performance. De'Aaron Fox played the first game and had put up a 23-8-6 stat line with 3 steals.
I like that. I like to see a guy who you think is a future cornerstone playing in summer league.
Yep.
Fox easily could have been like, no, I'm a second year player. Like, I don't need to do this. But I like the fact that he went out there, even if it was just for one game, and delivered kind of a statement performance.
I think he was going to play in more games too, but they sat in the second game with a sore Achilles, actually.
Oh.
Sore left Achilles, which is very concerning. Because those injuries never really get better.
Right. Well, look, sore could mean a lot of things.
Right.
You don't know what's going on there behind the scenes. It also could just mean, you know,
they're shutting him down.
He
was so good.
Rolled an ankle. He was really good. And, you know, let's just give him some rest.
But, look, here's the thing. It would have been really, really, really concerning if he hadn't been good. That's the other thing. Like,
yeah,
he needed to be good because when you're a second-year player going to summer league, if you're not
second
good...
Second-year, fifth overall pick,
like, you need to be good. But it's encouraging that he was good, so...
Yeah, I'm optimistic about Fox. I think Fox and Buddy Hield is an interesting backcourt.
Absolutely agreed. And then Justin Jackson had a really good second game, scored like 20 points, you know, really efficient shooting and everything.
Yeah, he just kind of got hot from three, yep. which is nice. He's going to have to be able to shoot. That's yep. his most obvious skill.
Yeah, I mean, he sort of reminds me of like a slightly less athletic, like Gerald Green almost, if that's a kind of an interesting comparison that comes to mind a lot when I watch him. I like Justin Jackson a lot. I think he can definitely play.
Yeah, he could always fill it up in college. One of the nice things about him is he seems like his game is pretty complete. You know, he's got all these different moves and counters, and he just like looks fluid out there. Yes,
agreed. So yeah, I mean, look, Kings, some up and down stuff in summer league, but I actually want to make the other point. I have one other point I want to make about them. I was just thinking about the Kings. I actually feel sort of positive about the Kings, which is a weird way. I haven't felt this way about the Kings in years, mm-hmm. but really reflecting on their move since Scott Perry left. I think Scott Perry's a horrible GM, by the way. I think he's like one of the worst GMs in the league, and I can't believe that people thought his like summer, last summer, was like really good and got him the Knicks job. Just like insane to me. But I think they've done a lot of smart stuff since then. They haven't done anything dumb. And like, look, I don't love the Bagley pick or whatever, but as we always say...
It's pretty discouraging. You have to wonder what Vlade's role really is behind the scenes and how much he's doing. When Vlade comes out and says things like, we think Bagley can play the three, it kind of undermines this idea that maybe they're smart. I mean, what we've wanted for the longest time is for the Kings to pretend to be dumb and right. actually do smart things.
Yes.
So if that was kind of like a like tongue-in-cheek sentiment, that's great, but I don't think it was. So yeah. We'll see. King's gonna king. We're excited to watch them play this yep. season.
Sucks they don't have their draft pick. Very sad.
They're gonna be bad. They'll yep. be on this podcast for a little bit.
For probably 2 or 3 more years. You know, shout out to the Kings. We love them. Then moving on to the Hawks. So I think the first thing we need to talk about the Hawks is the Trae Young struggles in summer league.
Have they done anything in terms of like free agency or
no,
so the Hawks have a ton of cap space.
$20 million in cap space.
The Hawks
salary dumps.
Exactly. Land. I mean, the problem is if everybody gets signed before they do a salary dump, you know, like there's heavy incentive for a team like the Lakers. There's so many teams that have salary they need to get off.
I have a Hawks idea I want to throw past you.
Okay. All right. Because we can talk about Trae Young in summer league in a sec, yes. but this is supposed to be a free yeah. agency pod too.
The Hawks have $20 million cap space.
Uh-huh.
How would you feel about the idea of, as part of a Kawhi Leonard to the Lakers trade, because the Spurs have expressed very little interest in Lonzo Ball, the Hawks absorbing Luol Deng's contract and getting Lonzo Ball, and in return they have to ship out that Mavericks pick to the Spurs as an asset the Spurs get they want instead of Lonzo Ball, but the Hawks get the yeah. number 2 pick in the draft last year, a guy who I think could complement Trae Young really well. You get two guys on the court who can like really pass the ball well and yeah. everything.
Look, I love Lonzo Ball.
Love Lonzo
Ball. I like Lonzo Ball more than I like Trae Young right now. I do think... I mean, look, Lonzo, it seems like both of those guys' identities are very much caught up in the idea of playing point guard.
Right.
So asking one of them, either of them, to play off the ball could be an issue. It's just a weird fit. It's also like a ton of ego. I love Lonzo Ball, though. If you could get him as part of a salary dump, I think that's great. I think the Spurs are making a mistake if they don't want Lonzo Ball. I think he makes a ton of sense with what the Spurs do.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the outline of the kind of trade I would like to see the Hawks pursuing.
Yeah, and they give
take on salary and get back a good young guy. That's definitely...
Because I don't feel that great. Like, that Mavericks pick is an asset. I don't think it's an incredibly valuable one, because I think it's going to be 10 to 14 pick in a draft that's not supposed to be that good. And I would rather trade that to get Lonzo Ball, even if it meant absorbing 2 years a day. It's just like an idea I had the other day that I float out there, because
yep.
I think that's an upside play you make if you're the Hawks. But I really like the Hawks being patient, not signing anyone in free agency. Like, they're clearly in it for the long run, which is just, like, shows a real...
steady hand.
Steady hand at the helm, exactly.
So, yeah, Trae Young has had some bad shooting performances so far in summer league. I think there's kind of this straw man out there, which I know you're going to try to play up, that people are, like, giving up on him, or like that people think this is such a big deal. I haven't really actually seen that many people saying that.
I think
we all kind of know that Trae Young is going to have some garish shooting nights, especially his first year. It's just going to be part of the process.
Well,
the
I don't think anyone who likes Trae Young is giving up on Trae Young. I think a lot of people who are low on Trae Young are using these performances as validation to their opinion, and I think that's nice. I watched those games. I liked a lot of what I saw with Trae Young. I've seen some people talk like he couldn't get past people on the perimeter and everything, and that's sort of true. He wasn't great when a guy was really set, but he was able to create advantages because his shooting is such a threat. Even though he wasn't shooting well, people really respect his jumper.
Right.
It's like how Curry...
he would have to be pretty bad for a long time for that to go away.
Yeah.
And you don't often see a rookie come into the league who we expect to have real gravity on the three-point line right away, but he will. Yeah. And probably even further than the three-point line. That's
absolutely
a nice thing about Trae, is his range does extend.
Exactly.
So because we kind of... And, like, I don't even hardly want to talk about these summer league performances. I don't think it's interesting. He could go out there and hit 8 threes.
Yeah.
And then everybody would, that would completely shift the whole narrative. Yep. But for Trae Young's rookie season, it seems pretty likely that he'll have bad shooting percentages.
Yes.
Just because he's going to be on a terrible team. He's going to have a heavy offensive load, and he's a rookie point guard. They're almost always bad.
He chucks.
He's a chucker. He has supreme confidence in his own abilities, yes. We'll say. But what kind of indicators statistically will you be looking for from Trae this year in order to gauge how successful he is as a rookie and just like how optimistic you feel about him going forward?
So the most important one for me is free throw attempts, because what was key for his game, like being efficient at Oklahoma, was getting to the line. And yep. I really want to see that translate to the NBA.
It's like, it's a little more palatable if you go 2-for-14 if you get to the line and you're 10-for-10 on your free throws.
And he shoots well from the line and everything, so that's one thing. Another thing that's really important for me is assist to turnover ratio. I think he's a good passer, but he also is very prone to turn the ball over, and I think he's going to turn over the ball a lot. But if we can at least see somewhat positive, at least I would like, what I'd really like to see is a positive trend in assist to turnover ratio over the course of the year. So if it starts out poorly, that's fine, but really seeing that improve. And then I'd really like to see his impact on offensive efficiency, on his on-off splits on offensive efficiency. I don't really care about the defensive end this year as a rookie, because I want to see how much impact him being on the court is having on his teammates' performance gravity.
You just brought up Lonzo Ball, and the thing about Lonzo's rookie year, he had pretty bad shooting percentages.
Really bad.
Really bad. Like 30% on threes.
Yeah.
So you don't love that. But Lonzo's on-off numbers were so good right away, and that passes the eye test too. If you watch the Lakers when he was out there, like, he makes other people better. Guy, it's the kind of thing where like guys run the floor when Lonzo's out there because they know they're going to get the ball. Lonzo plays D. He's always in the right place on both ends of the court. He's got a great feel for the game. I don't think that's going to be true about Trae Young. That's what concerns me about him. Like, the conversation about his passing, to me, his creation, obviously he's not similar in any other way, really, but his creation reminds me of, like, Russell Westbrook. He's going to put up a lot of assists, but it's still fundamentally, like, his focus is to get his, and he's looking for himself on the offensive end. So I hope I'm wrong. You know, I want him to be an incredibly successful NBA player, and that's the kind of thing that'll come out with his on-off numbers, is if he is this kind of, like, Lonzo Ball-esque, like, true point guard who makes other people better, then we should start to see that right away.
That's a really interesting comparison that I hadn't heard, this idea of like him being similar to Westbrook in that way, because they're very different players, but that's a very similar attribute they share. Look, I mean, I watched the first summer league game. I missed the second one, unfortunately. Also, oh my God, Jaren Jackson Jr.'s shot actually translates. I was really wrong about that. I was really worried about that.
I mean, it doesn't look good, but it
just
goes in.
And so, like, look, you're wrong. Like, that's something, like, it's hard watching someone in college shoot with the funky form. You're like, is that really going to translate 3 feet further out? I know he shot well in high school and everything, but that's a shorter line, too.
And there's other stuff that comes into play, you know? And then, like, you look at Bamba's form. His form looks perfect. Is it going to work? I don't know.
We'll see. But yeah, so Jaren Jackson Jr., I already really regret having a number 5 on my board. And like, I feel like if I'd been able to watch him shoot like that in workouts and really see him shooting from the NBA line more, I would have bumped him up more because I wasn't a believer in the shot.
Right. And we'll see. He could still
regress.
He could regress, obviously.
But it looked really good.
But it's looked really good so far. And that's encouraging. I had him at number 2, and it's because I did, at least to an extent, believe in his shooting. And if his shooting is even a threat, like a viable threat his first year, it's going to open up so many other things in his game and for their whole offense in general.
But to getting back to Trae Young, what I was going to say is that one of the frustrating things I found with Trae Young is he really struggled in the first half. He was like 0-for-10 to start. It was a real disaster. And what you saw from him is he started to press, clearly like frustrated about him not making any shots or anything.
Yep.
And he started, what the best point guards do when they're struggling to have a bad shooting night is they start getting their teammates involved, really focused on creating. And Trae Young just got more and more focused on trying to make his first shot, get his bucket, you know, get into his rhythm.
And he's a shooter, you know, and that's how shooters are. They want to see one go in.
Right.
Which, but that's fine.
To be a good point guard, you need to be more concerned about making sure the offense is flowing well than about you personally playing like well.
Yep. And I think that's the kind of thing you can learn and get better at over time too. But he probably will struggle. But he'll have some nights too where he gets really hot, have some really fun, probably like 30, maybe even 40 point games.
So. Yep. Another note on the Hawks, just quick things to wrap up. Kevin Huerter has a hand injury. I don't think we touched on this yet. Tendon in his shooting hand. He's going to miss all of summer league out.
That's a little concerning for a guy whose whole profile is built on his shooting, but you know, it's just the summer.
Hand injuries get better. Very rarely do you see a lingering hand injury. He should
be
fine. It's a bummer. Well, the big bummer is it's just like 2 to 3 months of lost development. Lost, like he can't, you know, practice his shooting as much. I think it's just, that's the bummer.
Yep. And it's a new ball. It's a longer 3-point line. Like you want him just in there all summer, and he's not going to be able to be. So, yeah. I mean, it probably means that Herter won't be, like, playing as much to start the year.
Yep. And then Amari's,
just a little bit of a stunt to his development.
And then Amari Spellman played in summer league, had a really tough second game, looked all right in the first game. I'm reserving judgment. I sort of like what I saw. Like, there's definitely, you definitely see the outline of what, you know, Travis Schlenk saw when he drafted him 30th overall.
Yeah, and I think what I said about him, which I still stand by, is that if the threes go in, he's a valuable player. And if they don't, he's a 10th man.
Yep. All right. That's really all we've got this week. Anything else to add?
Not really. Maybe there's, like, some long-term stuff that's kind of fun to talk about with, like, who's going to be in the five truly horrible teams.
Oh, yeah.
Like, are the Suns going to make it out? That seems like I would give the Suns the same chance of graduating. That's the term we want to use.
Yep.
Graduating as the other four teams combined. I think those other four teams are all clearly going to suck.
Really hard for me to see any of the other four teams graduate. I think,
but the Suns are trying. And the Suns will be compelling. And we talked about, like, what's the metric? How will we know when they're not truly horrible anymore? Because we also look at the long-term arc of these teams, and the Suns have missed the playoffs enough and been bad enough for long enough that it's going to take more than just, like, a good 10-game stretch.
But it really seems
like, I think,
like,
if they start
on...
to sniff the upper 30s in wins, they have some good wins over playoff teams. It's just, like, respectability that we're looking for out of them this year, which, if it sets them up to make the playoffs next year, that's probably, maybe, like, we'll evaluate around Christmas.
December. Yeah, that could really be their time. Because if they're on that position,
like, but I'll probably be reluctant to push them up on Christmas unless they're already really good. But I think by, like, the All-Star break trade deadline range, we'll probably be graduating them. There's also just some other really bad teams in the league that project to be terrible and are knocking on the door.
Oh, yeah.
So that'll be fun.
The upward arc, I mean, they're really clearly on that upward path now. They're back on the path towards contention, and we just need to figure out, you know, when we really cut things off.
And, like, how good are they? It's fun administrative stuff for people who care about this minutia as much as we do.
Yeah. You know, feel free to reach out to us if you have opinions on this. We're open to listener suggestions.
But, you know, maybe just, like, flagrantly asking to come on the pod.
It might not be the best strategy.
Not the best approach.
Yeah.
But we love to talk about this stuff. Thank you to our listeners, and peace.
Yeah, peace.